This is CliffCentral.com.
It's time to check in on the Burning Platform. Every single week we get together with Justice Malala. He brings in all the main stories of the week and we break it down for you so that you can walk around the office today and sound like you know everything. So even if you're smart, and we take it for granted that our listeners here on CliffCentral.com are smart, I mean, you figured out how to listen to us. And you have data, so you know. The assumption is that you're pretty smart to begin with. Let's just put that aside for a second. We all get confused by the political goings on in this country. Sometimes even the politicians get confused.
They do.
So we need to figure it out, and Justice fortunately is on hand to help us.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
So Justice, where are we?
Guys, yeah, before we get into it, Carl, you just have just mentioned the Republican National Convention.
Yes.
I mean,
soap stars and Donald Trump's children.
Yes. What's that about? Can you imagine at the ANC conference in December next year?
If we have Duduzane, Duduzile.
All 21.
First of all, the ANC conference would have to last 8 days just to accommodate all the children.
It's been like a parade of Donald Trump's family. And then And then the speech by Melania. Oh, my word.
Can I just ask, before we even get into Melania's speech, do you think there's a tendency towards autocracy in the world? And I say that with tongue firmly lodged in cheek, because if you look at Russia under Vladimir Putin, how many years now between him and Medvedev swapping seats, but effectively staying at the top of the table? You've got Erdogan, who pulled off this false flag coup last week in Turkey.
And now he's just clamping down on journalists, on academics, on basically everyone.
Judges.
Yeah. I mean, 2,000 judges?
It's unbelievable. And Syria, al-Assad is still there. He's still in power, despite the Russians liking him, the Americans not liking him, ISIS growing under his wings. Yeah. It's just a disaster. In fact, all of this immigration that's making the whole of Europe so nervous is as a result of Assad and his own policies and his own nastiness to his own people. And then we've got Gedleyihlekisa here. We've got Robert Mugabe just north of the border, who keeps mouthing off about stuff, even though he's in his 90s and should be in a mental hospital. What's going on?
I agree with you on that 90s stuff, but yes, I hear you. I have to say, it was interesting. Yesterday, there was an interview with a guy from, it's not so much the move to autocracy, as it were.
Well, Trump is the reason, I thought.
But it's for me, it's that populist, no policy kind of leadership. So if you think seriously about
it,
if you think seriously about it, who actually should presidential material be talking about building a wall between the US and Mexico to keep people out? It is so dumb but this is the man who is well on his way.
You know, you'd expect like a Habsburg emperor to be saying this in 1500. It's not the kind of thing you'd expect to hear now. Maybe I misspoke then by saying autocracy. Maybe this idea that there's a father figure for everybody.
Yes.
And people want to tend towards someone who gives them simple answers. Even if they're wrong.
Even if they're wrong. It's, oh no, he will lead us and so forth. Yeah. So there's an element of that. Plus, I think there's an element of deep nationalism and separatism. So basically, Donald Trump is saying, make America great again. We're going to sock it to the Russians and we're going to sock it to the Chinese. And we the Americans. And it's this lager mentality.
And it's the idea that the police, you can't support the police and be a black man, and you can't be a black man and support the police. It's crazy that there's this division that seems to be happening on every level, the rich and the poor, if you look at what Bernie Sanders was saying. It seems that everybody wants to separate out.
Exactly. So, America is in turmoil, but you look at the UK, those divisions that you talk about, were exactly behind the Brexit decision.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the rest of Europe and what's happening in France, what's happening in parts of Germany. I mean, the rise of parties like the AfDB really scares me. Marine Le Pen is a serious player for the election in France next year. So I think there is a sense all over the world that people are closing down. People are saying in our little corner with people who look like me, it's almost like you have
tribalism.
Yeah, but the conditions are not great, and I don't want to be alarmist about it, but it does feel a bit like, oh, you know what the French were saying just before 1939, 1940. And what the Italians were saying with Mussolini, mm-hmm. and what Hitler was saying, you know, oh, it's us blonde and Teutonic types, and oh, the rest of you just go to the gas chamber or something like that.
Mm.
You know, it's a very unsettled world, and I think we're going through a dangerous time in global politics, and I'm not sure when you look at the leadership that we have, the Trumps of the world, the Putins of the world, all the people, Erdogan, you mentioned, Assad.
Yeah.
These are very dangerous people to have so much power to press buttons. If you think about what happened in about Syria and innocent and hospitals being bombed simply because they're in areas that that were seen as being occupied by rebel forces. Again, you think this guy is the president of this country?
And he's fine. He's not moving.
He's fine. And he's unleashed one of the biggest migrations in recent history in the world. And, you know, he's in power because he plays off the Russians against the Americans. And it's so he stays in power. So it's a dangerous place.
So in other words, no matter how frustrated you are with our political system, no matter how much you get turned off by seeing Claudi and Faith Mutambi and Dudu Mieni and all of these things in the news, it seems like the whole world is in a situation. It's not just us. So don't feel sorry for yourself.
Don't feel too sorry for yourself. But it's always dangerous to say, I'm going to lower my standards now because, oh, everyone else is so rubbish.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth thinking about the state of the world. You know, we don't talk enough about Venezuela, where the economy has so absolutely collapsed that last weekend 100,000 people queued at the border with Colombia to go into Colombia to go and buy toilet paper. It's like.
And this is, of course, I've got him on the show tomorrow, Julius Malema.
Oh, yes.
So we're talking to Julius about the EFF and their policies.
Yeah.
And he says some pretty strange things about property ownership, for example.
Yeah.
But, you know, he used to have two heroes. He always used to say Robert Mugabe was someone to look up to in Africa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We can quote him verbatim on this, even though he now distances himself from him.
Yeah.
And is now on the side of the people. Then his other hero was Hugo Chavez.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about what a disaster Hugo Chavez left in his wake.
It's called, if I arrive here, and you know, we know that in the studio we've got Justice, who likes his lollipop, and we've got Ben, who likes a bit of lettuce, you know. And we know that if you eat the lettuce, you will be fine. You'll live to Mugabe's age, 92 or more. If you go keep on sucking that lollipop with the sugar and the fizzy stuff, da da da, you're a goner in 5 years, okay? So, Hugo Chavez and Venezuela had oil. If you were Venezuelan, you were rich. In the boom years when oil was at its peak, selling at whatever, more than $100 a barrel, essentially, every single citizen of Venezuela was getting $10,000, $15,000 a month from oil revenue, okay? So instead of taking that money and building, investing in education, in manufacturing, in all these other things, what did they do? Oh, they gave away, they gave social grants, it was like, oh, eat, quick. oil collapses, the oil price collapses, and boom, there's no money anymore.
Yet another attempt at socialist economics.
There you go.
Failed.
There you go. Failed.
But just
so now people are queuing. 100,000 people. There's a town on the border. Just quickly. It's like Bidebridge, basically. There's a town on the border. There was a queue from one shop that went around the whole city with Venezuelans queuing, okay, to buy toilet paper.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Okay, it's collapsed. This is the big hill. So you think about countries like that. You think about Zimbabweans and the fact that, you know, suddenly out of thin air like that, it's no, you can't bring in stuff from South Africa.
By the way, do you know who the richest woman in Venezuela is?
No.
Hugo Chavez's daughter.
You know who the richest woman in Angola is?
The president's daughter.
José Eduardo dos Santos's daughter. Do you know how many farms Robert Mugabe owns?
A lot.
19.
Really?
Yep, there you go.
That's a lot of farms. All right.
So, yes, the world is in a pretty bad state. So let's talk about the happy news here at home.
All right. Well, I had Julius on a recording which will play out tomorrow.
Sure.
And he spoke about a lot of things. One thing he admitted to is that the EFF are likely to be kingmakers in at least one or two metros, which you've indicated before.
Yeah.
He actually used the word kingmaker, and I think he's very, very chuffed at that position, because for a small party to have that much power is obviously quite gratifying. They're also hoping for double-digit numbers in a number of parts of South Africa. He told me proudly they've got a councillor in every ward for the EFF. Mm. And he said it's expensive to run elections. Mm. But who will get into bed with who on August the 4th?
I think he's absolutely right on that. I think the city of Tshwane, the city Nelson Mandela Bay, are the two cities where I think the EFF is definitely in play. I think this is a situation where you're going to have the ANC. Certainly, you know, Julius Malema will be getting a lot of offers on the 4th of August, where people will be saying, "My brother, I've got a hotel room. Come, let's talk." And they'll be from, you know, Guatemantashe will be calling him, because if you have the city of Tshwane and the ANC goes to 42 from its current 49 or 59 in 2011, even if it's at 48, you need a coalition partner. Will the UDM be make enough? No. Will the whoever else make enough? The EFF is on record as saying, you know what, we are not looking at the ANC at all. So the DA-EFF love-in is going to be an interesting one, because how do you make these things work? And it will be interesting to hear your conversation with Julius, particularly about...
Right? That's what's going to happen.
Well, that song is for Gwede and Julius if they get together. But if it's Moosey and Julius, now, I don't know. We'll just have to play.
I know what that would be.
Come together as one.
I was thinking of something else. I was thinking more of this. For if the EFF and the DA get together,
yeah.
I was thinking more of something along the lines of Marvin Gaye. Let's get it on.
I like that.
I think that's the one we've got to go for. And it's got to sound something like this.
This is Julia.
No, this is probably Moosey.
This is Moosey.
And if you feel... like I feel. Come on, let's coalesce.
Come on.
Let's get it on. Tshwane. In Nelson Mandela Bay. Yeah, that's the thing.
But the thing we're not talking about is that song played big and loud in KwaZulu-Natal in 2011. So you think about KwaZulu-Natal, and we always think 1990s, ANC, IFP. So, you know, we talk a lot about how long Robert Gabriel has stayed in power in Zim. Mm. But if you think about it, the IFP was started in 1975, and it's had one president since then. And his name is Mangosuthu Buthelezi.
That's 5 years longer than Bob has been in charge of Zimbabwe.
Exactly.
Okay.
So right, now, in the run-up to 2011 elections, you know, people kept on saying, there's this lady who is powerful, strong, knows the stuff, has been with the party for a long time. Isn't it time for Ms. Magwaza Msibi to become leader of the IFP?
No.
Again and again, it does. No, she's not ready. No, you're not ready. And she isn't the first, by the way. Since the 90s, there have been people, a whole lot of people, a procession of people kind of, I'm close, and boom, you're out of the IFP. I'm close, boom, you're out of people. So
it's hard to get people who believe in traditional leadership and primogeniture and the laws of succession
exactly
to leave office, even if their support has dwindled year on year, almost by a half every time.
So Magwaza Msibi went off and started the NFP. And what happens is that, particularly in the north of KwaZulu-Natal and in the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands, the IFP vote is not just eaten away by the ANC, but it gets split by the NFP walking out of the IFP and setting up shop. So in 19 municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal, in the north of KwaZulu-Natal, you end up in 2011 with the ANC getting, say, 48% or 45%, and the NFP coming up strong and getting maybe 10, 15, whatever percent. And what happens then? Boom, that song just comes on.
Right.
And it's Mangosuthu saying, I'm sorry, let's get it on. It's Magwaza Msibi saying, no. And then what happens then? The ANC makes the call. Senzo Mkhunu was the chairman at the time. And you have these coalitions that we don't even talk about. But you have these coalitions in municipalities across the board. 19 municipalities in KZN until today have been run by the ANC and the NFP.
And we see also a lot of real danger for people in political office in KZN, because we've seen assassinations. There's no fun and games in KZN. It's not about coalitions. It's about if you're in the way, we could take you out.
Yeah. So there's two things. So just to finish on this coalition thing. So now remember that the NFP forgot to pay in its cash. Okay. So they are not on the ballot paper this time around. So someone has just lost a coalition partner in KwaZulu-Natal, and that's the ANC. If the IFP, which is what it's doing now, it's going around knocking on Mabale's door, Mabale, remember that before you went to NFP, come back home. There's a big fight about over those municipalities, because they were coalition. And now the coalition partner is not in play at all. Out, boom. So the DA might be the next one, because the DA has been growing steadily in KZN, not by big numbers, but steadily. It might be someone else. There might be independents, because in KwaZulu-Natal, if you look at Eteguini region, there are 53 ANC leaders who've walked away.
Wow.
And are standing out of 103 wards.
Wow. More than half.
More than half are sitting there saying, you know what? I'm going to do it by myself. So there's a whole thing going on in KwaZulu-Natal. There's a lot of flux about what's going to happen on the 4th.
You see, and we've all been looking at Nelson Mandela Bay, Tswane, and Durban. Look at what's going on in Durban. This might be the most interesting story of them all.
This is a big story, because there's a whole big changes, and it's all about the ANC and divisions inside the ANC and so forth.
Wow.
So it's quite a thing.
Unbelievable.
So I think that's another Marvin Gaye thing going on there. That's going to be very, very interesting.
All right, there are some other things, and I know you have to rush out of here shortly, so let's get through some of these things. Why did they have this AIDS conference in Durban, and why does it matter so much?
I just think we've stopped talking about AIDS in South Africa. There was a time when you know, young people like Mabale and Ben don't remember this, but you know, you and I, Gareth, old in the tooth times. You know, okay. But HIV AIDS was such a big feature and a big conversation point in the 90s, in the 2000s, when there were real fights. You know, people like us in the media spoke all the time about Mandela's presidential spokesperson, who became Biggie's presidential spokesperson, Pax Mangatlan, mm-hmm. who, you know, to this day has not, we haven't said this enough, but there were big controversies about what did Pax die of. For me, growing up, and you know, I'm sure maybe he popped up in the conversation with Julius Malema. Peter Mokaba was such a big feature of my youth, as the leader of the SA Youth Congress and then of the ANC Youth League. You know, died essentially saying HIV/AIDS doesn't exist, doesn't antiretrovirus and so forth. So the political battle over HIV/AIDS and the efficacy of antiretrovirals was won. Whatever one might say about Jacob Zuma when he came to power in 2009, on December 1, 2009, Jacob Zuma probably gave the speech of his life, and it was the speech that said, "We are done with that stuff. We
antiretrovirals rolling out this,
all that."
And let's be fair, that may be the only saving grace in his legacy.
That is, you know, I'm battling right now to find something else. But that is a powerful, powerful thing that this presidency, this administration has done.
But it does have the effect that it has sort of quietened down the discussion around it.
Exactly. And for me, from this conference, when I saw the statistic that says the new infections that are coming through are so frightening. It's, where's the education? What have we done that we still have so many? So I think we still think of it as a medical, that, you know, there'll be a cure, there'll be a vaccine, there'll be a whatever. And actually, you know, the cure is in talking about this stuff, and we don't seem to be doing it enough.
My main motivator is to stay on gold and vitality. So I go for my 6-monthly AIDS test, and it gives me points.
Maybe we need more of that. We need more of that at the state health system.
Well, look, it's
because, you know, we're not winning, actually, at 500,000 new infections in the past year.
That is a very scary statistic, and it is. I'm glad that you brought it up, because actually I hadn't thought about it much myself. Mm. And we hear about these AIDS conferences, but this one pulled in the big names. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people there talking about some very, very frightening things that we may have brushed under the carpet, that we may think of retrovirals as a cure now, and we just leave it in the back of our minds rather than pull it to the front. Mm. But we cannot carry on with this kind of infection rate. This is a major, major problem.
This is a massive, massive problem.
And also, remember, every new infection means new AZT rollouts. It's going to cost the state. They're going to be people who aren't always at their best performance. In other words, they can't be productive members of society to the degree that they could if they were healthy.
Exactly. But you think about the opportunity cost. The fact that we spend so much on ARVs, you know, with all the attempts to drive down prices and so forth. Mm. If we talk about a national health insurance scheme, whether we'll have one or not, but part of the debate is we keep spending money on other things when long term, if we wanted a long term plan, a 25-30 year plan for a national health insurance, that's where we should be moving towards. But we are not, because there are massive short term demands, and those are for your ARVs and other treatments that are needed. You know, we don't talk about the fact that actually our big challenge remains TB, because and we spend so much trying to, well, curing TB. Mm. If we didn't have to do that because of the complications of HIV infection and all that. So there's a big conversation about statecraft, about budgets that needs to be had. But it's also about people. Ordinary good people are getting infected. And I think conversations you know, there were so many people talking about this stuff, about prevention and so forth, about safe sex and so forth, in the early 2000s. You don't, you know, those NGOs don't get funding anymore because people say, oh, no, that problem is gone. It's not gone. Yeah. In fact, when I listened to what's going on at the AIDS conference this year, I felt like, wow, it's bigger. If you think about it, the only change is that now we don't stigmatize as much. We acknowledge that it's there, but it's a big problem.
And clearly we don't care as much as we used to.
No, we don't.
Justice, I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball here. I just read this morning on Mzansi Live that Thabo Mbeki was asked if he could be relied on to ask for votes in Johannesburg. And Mayor Parks Tau said, we will keep you posted. But he has made it clear that he will not be campaigning for Jacob Zuma. That's former President Thabo Mbeki, which I think is interesting. That's just come out this morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nothing, no big surprise there. But the Gauteng ANC could do well with an endorsement from Thabo Mbeki, right?
It could do very well with an endorsement from Thabo Mbeki. He remains very powerful. You look at
most successful ANC president at the polls ever.
Ever. I mean, Thabo Mbeki took the ANC from 62% in 1994. To 69.3, I think, in 2004. That's the highest number the ANC has ever reached. From 2004, Jacob Zuma took it down to 65.9, and he took it further down to 62% in 2014. So he lost 7 percentage points in just the 2 elections that he oversaw. Thabo Mbeki was hugely popular. Thabo Mbeki had an economy that was pumping. You know, you think about 2006, we had an economy growing in the third quarter by 5.9%. That's nearly 6% that we want in the NDP. You had, to be fair, it was during a time when the world was doing very well. Even Hugo Chavez was doing very well. So only Zimbabwe was doing badly. So, you know, an urban vote like the Joburg vote or the Gauteng vote generally needs leadership, needs encouragement for the ANC from someone like Thabo Mbeki. I mean, if he's not going to do it, it's not just that he's saying no. It's also, why is he saying no? And I think the spotlight once again turns to the capital city, turns to the president, and it's people start saying maybe it's because Thabo Mbeki is reminding us, and that's ANC people I'm talking about, that they made some bad choices in leadership. Both in 2007 and 2012. So I think it's a very pointed comment without being a comment. The key thing is, look at how well that book, The Thabo Mbeki I Know, is doing on the charts, on the bestseller lists. It's picking up readership, it's selling. In winter, most book publishers say, oh, you know, books don't sell in winter. People are too busy and depressed and they want to get into bed. But that book is selling right in the middle of winter. It's flying off the shelves. So you know, Thabo Mbeki would be great for the ANC, but I'm not surprised if he stands up and says, 2 weeks ago he said, he travels around the rest of the continent and people say to him, what's going wrong with your country? You guys have lost it. You are our last big, great hope. And you seem to be, you know, leaderless, directionless. What's going on? So he can't stand up and say that 2 weeks ago and then turn around and say, hey, Ben, vote for the ANC. He'd be saying, well, vote for the same thing. That's a big problem.
I've got, and we know that the ANC in Gauteng is almost a different animal to the national ANC.
Very much so, yeah.
I've got Paul Mashatile coming on. What should I ask him? What do you want me to talk to him about?
Ask him if he believes that the ANC that we have today is the one
he went to jail for.
Well, that's a very good question to ask him. But also, is the one that he really wants people to vote for.
Sure. You know what he's going to say.
Yes, I know what he's going to say, but it would be interesting to see how he formulates it.
Should I read his body language and report back to you?
Because there is a Paul Mashatile that many of us know, and that's the Paul Mashatile who, you know, we sit here in Bryanston and we say, go across the highway to Alexandra Township.
Mm. He was the president of the Alexandra branch for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah. He was in the 80s. They would arrest the apartheid cops would arrest Paul Mashatile. The minute they released him or he got bail or whatever, he'd be out on the streets fighting and fighting. I don't think there's anyone in Alexandra Township who was detained as many times or arrested as many times as Paul Mashatile was. And that Paul Mashatile, that young idealistic Paul Mashatile, is the one when I see some of the stuff that the National ANC thinks is okay, the SABC saga, that sort of thing. And I say, but Paul, is that the guy? And I'm not sure that he is that person. So I think it's worth asking him that question.
Justice, you mentioned the SABC. We can't have a week go by without us talking about it. There's always something exciting going on at the SABC, and I see lots of people are suddenly being brought to book by the courts. So does this mean that the untouchables are suddenly finding themselves touched by the law?
The law touches them, and the law speaks. You know, let's not forget, guys, that Thuli Madonsela, who we all agree is one of the best things since sliced bread, plus one of the best Chapter 9 institution leaders that we've seen, has actually ruled in the past that Hlaudi Motsoeneng should not be in the job that he's in.
Right.
Okay. So again and again, we have the institutions of state, the courts, the law, so many saying, no, don't do that. Parliament calling people in saying, no, you can't do that. But they stay in power. And I think the thing, you say we can't go a week without touching on the SABC. Maybe I should come in every day. It should become a daily soapy now, not a weekly, because there's something every day.
Well, I noticed you tweeting about this just yesterday, I think it was. You quoted Thuli Madonsela tweeting the following. She said, power tends to intoxicate, and stolen power even more. Don't make decisions based on being drunk with power, as abused power dissipates fast. You quoted that, and then you said, Hlaudi, my brother, listen and learn.
Hlaudi may be listening, but it seems to me that there is a group of people who are untouchable. The fact that, once again, SAA still has not submitted its financial results, that it doesn't have anyone running it. Why is it? It's the one place that can be fixed in South Africa. Why is it the SABC, Hlaudi Motsoeneng, again and again scoped by the courts? And it's okay. So these untouchables, people who go to court and lie, like the head of the Hawks, Benning Ntlemeza, they're still in, you know, it's okay. They are as immune to public censure as Melania Trump. You can just steal someone's speech with 10 million people all over the world watching you, and it's okay. It's just not okay. For me, it's just not okay. We can't have this. It's not okay. But, you know, that's what it is. So I look at Hlaudi yesterday and I say, wow, you know, it's fantastic. The Helen Suzman Foundation goes to court, says, you've got to stop this. You've got to show if the people of Zandspruit are protesting, you can't censor that footage. Well, will Hlaudi and all the executives left at the SABC, all four of them, actually show that footage? I don't know. I don't think so. And you know what? There is no consequence. And this is the problem with this country. Where is the consequence? If people knew that if I do this and it's against the constitution of South Africa, there will be consequence. But you know what? For Hlaudi, for Dudu Mieni, for many, many others, there's no consequence. And so it's okay. And so that leaves me very depressed. Is there something better we can talk about?
Well, we've got Pastor Evan Moarire coming in later
on. Oh, fantastic.
So we've got a bumper week this week on CliffCentral.com. Mm, but Pastor Evan is obviously the new enemy for the Mugabe regime. I feel sorry for this man because he's a citizen. He's just a guy who decided to let his feelings show about his country. This flag is the movement which he started. But Mugabe says he is influenced by foreign forces and is not part of us. This old rubric.
This is what I want to talk about. This conspiracy theory, that these conspiracy theories that abound. Whenever someone starts having a voice, okay, and saying, it's not okay, suddenly it's, they've got to him now. He's being funded by the CIA. He's a force of the worst, of the West, and he's the this. You know, why is it Africans can't actually say, no, I don't like it, and people say, yeah, that one doesn't like it. It's got to be, oh, that one, yes, we know he's funded by the British, or the this, or the... So Africans can't think, basically.
But it's also a question of they don't recognize the agency of these people.
Exactly.
That these are individuals who might have thoughts of their own, and it's deeply insulting. It's kind of a little bit of self-loathing, almost.
It's self-loathing, it's dehumanizing, it's all sorts of things. That, you know what, it's okay for me to say, oh, Mugabe, you've been in power for 36 years, thank you very much, it's great. But when I start saying, actually, people don't have food to eat, people don't have prospects, 3 million or whatever of your own people have left the country, are working as, you know, doctors in Botswana, nurses in South Africa, all over. They are all over the world, okay? Because they cannot work in their own country, and you are some hero. So, you know, I find it amazing. But we've seen this story before. Morgan Tsvangirai, others have been brutally beaten up in Zimbabwe. And yesterday when Mugabe stood up and told a youth meeting that... use your strength to defend your country. I thought, this is the kind of stuff, actually, that should be taken to the International Criminal Court. Excuse me. Because what he was saying was that, go out, beat up these people, or kill them if you want. And we've seen this before. The 2008 election, which the MDC won, and then we had the presidential runoff. In the 3 months between the first election and the presidential runoff, what happened was a festival of violence and murder, which intimidated the people of Zimbabwe, and Robert Mugabe stole that election in 2008. And he mustn't think we've forgotten. We haven't forgotten. He's not a legitimate leader. But what he's doing now is basically saying, Evan Moarire will be beaten up, mm-hmm. will be maybe killed by these young people and essentially instructed by him. He should go to jail for that if anything happens to Evan Moarire.
Well, we'll talk to him later on and find out how he's feeling. And obviously we want to keep him safe, so I'm not going to get him to say anything that's going to get him into even more trouble, but I want to hear the story as it unfolded.
I think it's definitely a story worth listening. I think if you want to say what's good about us, what's good about this continent and this country, it's people like that. People saying, you know what, it's not about a party or anything, it's about the people. And we need more people like that. We forget our heroes. In the 1980s it was Archbishop Desmond Tutu, it was Frank Chikane, it was many other people like Pastor Evan Moarire who kept the apartheid regime on its toes. And he's doing the same in Zimbabwe.
Thank you, Justice. Always good to have you here on a Thursday morning with The Burning Platform.
Absolute pleasure.
We will see you next week. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, only a couple of days to the elections.
Yeah, it's getting close. It's getting close, and it's getting more exciting. I think the conversation about coalitions that you're having with Julius is just the thing to listen to, because I think on the 4th, on the 5th, that's the, there'll be lots of chess games going on, depending on the result. But I think there'll be lots of fantastic new formulations coming up, which will be, for the next 5 years, will be a something to behold.
Julius Malema's on tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, but a little bit later on today, Pastor Evan Mawarire and Justice Malala. If you missed any of this podcast, you can download it on cliffcentral.com in just a few minutes' time. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, we will see you again next week.
This is cliffcentral.com.